strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Gotta love the cars. Thanks for being here. It is the Mike Broomhead Show. Been a busy morning on the show. We have had the governor in studio for 30 minutes. We had Stephen Richer, who is the county recorder, and we've had Kathy Hoffman, superintendent of public schools, get a multitude of voices, all the perspectives, because I think in the end, we got decisions to make. What do we do with our kids? Now, the governor said there is no mandates for masks or vaccines or vaccine passports in the state of Arizona, period. So I asked him, you know, the thought process behind all of this is about parental control, and he said this.
It's about parental choice, and it's about common sense and personal responsibility. So the parents are going to make the decision on this.
So the reaction from the superintendent, Kathy Hoffman, was this.
My first reaction to that is, what about in our elementary and middle schools, you know, our K-8 grade levels, where children under the age of 12 do not have access to the vaccines? They are not eligible to receive the vaccines. And so we have really lost a tool in our toolbox for our schools to not have that local decision-making authority.
So I asked Ms. Hoffman very pointedly, why are parents not better equipped or equally as equipped to make the decision of what's best for their children as the school districts?
I guess I just don't presume that every parent has the time to do the research, to talk to their medical experts. I know I just don't assume that every, you know, that sometimes there's language barriers, there's all kinds of challenges. So I just don't assume that everyone has the same information or the same time to do the research. And so that's why it's important for the public health experts to make recommendations and for people who are in leadership roles to provide that steady leadership.
And so I disagree with what the superintendent said to this degree. I think parents are very informed, especially when it comes to their children. There is not an American. I don't think there's a person in the world that doesn't understand COVID-19. Whatever their beliefs are about it, everyone's familiar with it. I don't know of anyone. I can't think of anyone that isn't familiar with COVID-19. And so parents and going back to school, preparing your children for what they're going to need to be successful is what's first and foremost on a parent's mind. Going back into a classroom setting. The other part of it is when the superintendent talked about children not being eligible for the vaccine yet, we understand that the younger you are, the less chance you have of getting COVID-19, but certainly the less chance you have of severe illness or death. The numbers don't lie. There have been over 153,500 cases of COVID-19. Now, that is still not nearly the highest on the list. It's the second highest next to 20 to 44 years old. Younger people are getting COVID-19. What's not happening is serious illness. If you look at the numbers, they have had 2,343 hospitalizations of people under the age of 20. Now, I don't know how that breaks down to elementary age students, how many of those have been hospitalized, but it is a dramatically lower number than the other age groups. And as far as deaths go, it's not even close. 34 deaths across the state of Arizona of people under the age of 20. 34. The next closest group is 20 to 44 years old with 766. Everyone else is over 1,000. And when you get to 65 plus, it's 13,500 deaths. So we understand that the youngest people among us are the least likely to be severely ill. The concern has been young people being so not being so literally so small of an impact, so minimally impacted that they're asymptomatic. And so then they spread it to someone that can get severely ill. But I don't know of a time in our lives that we've ever punished. When I say punish, I guess it's a harsh word, but where we have ever held someone else accountable for somebody else's safety. As a matter of fact, I've always, you know, I use examples that I know. One of the great joys in my mother's life is living close to my brother's children, my nieces and my nephew, who are all athletes in their own right, and always have been. They've been very athletic. My nephew is the youngest. He's not in high school yet, but I imagine he's going to follow in my brother, his father's footsteps, and be a superstar athlete. But his daughters have done the same thing. His middle daughter is a superstar basketball player in high school basketball. My oldest niece has graduated from high school. school, but she's a barrel racer and does very well in the sport of barrel racing. And my mother's great joy is to go to their events and watch them at all of their events. For a long time, she didn't go. There was never a thought in her mind that my nieces and nephews, her grandchildren, wouldn't participate in what they could so that my mom could be safe. Never. You know, their idea is they keep themselves safe. Kids should be kids. Kids should be able to grow up. Kids should be able to live a life. And just because they could get something that could be transferred to someone else doesn't mean you restrict the child. It means the people that are have limited contact with the children as long as this virus is around. The Delta variant is much more contagious by statistics, much more contagious than the other variants that we've seen, which is why we're seeing this uptick. I've said before, when COVID-19 was around, we were keeping kids warehoused. We were stopping them from going to school, and they were not the ones that were in danger. We were doing that to them so they wouldn't make older people sick. But we never did anything to restrict older people. No one told older people to stay home. Now, we did stop visitations in nursing homes. There's another thing about COVID-19 that I don't understand. And I don't understand the idea behind this. Knowing some people that have COVID-19 in their family right now, and then you can't visit them because of policies in a hospital. What if one person has COVID-19 and their spouse, and they're hospitalized, and their spouse is also COVID positive? They're still not letting that person in. Who are they protecting? Especially if you've got someone that is at risk of dying from this virus. Especially if you have someone that is at serious risk. The policies we have in place a lot of times don't seem to have much common sense to them. If you have someone that is at near the end of their life, and we've heard horror stories about people who have died alone because of COVID restrictions, I don't understand who you're protecting when you do those things. It seems ghoulish to me. Now, there may be a rational explanation. There may be somebody out there in the medical field that can tell me that if you've got a husband and a wife that have been married, or even parents and children, where this is someone that is so severely ill that there's a chance that they may not recover from COVID-19. If their family members have already been vaccinated, or if their family members are COVID positive, why wouldn't they be able to have that visitation and spend time with their family? I don't understand some of these policies. They seem to be born more of emotion than they are in common sense. And the same with these masks. Younger people don't seem to be at that much risk. And yet they are the ones that are being restricted and punished. In my mind, it's being punished. And I wish we would reassess how we do this. Kathy Hoffman on the show, as I said, she's the superintendent. I want you to hear a little bit more of what Ms. Hoffman had to say about this, because in the end, who has control? And I'll tell you what her perspective is, and we'll kind of respond to some of it coming up in a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again for being here. Really appreciate you spending some time with the show. It's been a busy morning. We've had the superintendent of public schools on, Kathy Hoffman, and talking about a school district that is already shutting down because of a staff shortage and quarantines. And just a little comment she made.
Some of our schools that have already started this school year, there's been one district that had to close schools this week because operationally they did not have enough staff to be able to serve their students. We've had entire classrooms have to go into quarantine in other districts. So we are we're not doing everything we can to prevent these types of situations.
What you can do, and I think what Superintendent Hoffman can do, what district leaders across the state of Arizona can do, is make very serious recommendations to parents and say, this is what you should be doing. And, there was no complaint, and I don't want to pick a fight, but I did not hear the superintendent lamenting the closing of schools and school districts during the sick outs when teachers staged a sick out because they didn't like the policies. But now all of of a sudden, it's a shame that schools have to be closed because of the pandemic. Parents have the option to mask their children. As the governor said, no one is precluding or forbidding mask usage. If there is an area where there is a severe outbreak or there's high levels of COVID-19 spread, and the school districts are well within their rights to send notifications back home to parents and say, we have got a high rate of spread. Please send your children to school with a mask. Please do that. You know, I would even say, and I don't know if this, I don't think this violates the law, but if a parent says to a teacher, I'm sending my child to school with a mask, please make sure he or she wears it, because kids will sometimes take it off, put it in a backpack, not wear it, not do what their parents say. There's a lot of options for schools. I don't understand the anger about a lack of a mandate. Every parent out there should be happy about the freedom to make choices, because there are going to be times when the school districts want to mandate things that you don't agree with, and then you're going to be mad that the precedent had been set that the school districts can mandate that this happen or that happen. And I think in the end, parents need to have control, and that means their decisions stand. I don't expect all teachers to like it, but in the end, the parents should have the final say in what their children do. And I would also say that parents care more about their children than anybody else does. And if there is an outbreak of COVID-19, and you're going to send your child into a situation, into especially the elementary school kids, the petri dish of a classroom, and you live with your parents, or you, one of your parents is living with you, you're going to do everything you can to keep your child safe. And that's going to include wearing a mask. So there's a lot of options for parents. People are acting like, because they're furious about this, like there are no options. That's not true. The districts can make recommendations. The districts can put out information about spread. They can talk about findings. They can put out CDC notifications. There's a multitude of things they can do. The one thing they cannot do is force a family to make a decision to wear a mask if they don't want to. And I don't know how that's a bad thing. Ultimately, the parents have to make the right decision. We are all part of a community, and most people are community minded. And when it's out there and they say we're recommending mask usage, we're recommending this, then a lot of people will say, well, if you're recommending it, that makes sense. What the governor said on the show today is exactly what I've been saying for a long time. Go consult your doctor. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to the school districts. Go to a doctor and do what your doctor says. That's what I did. You know, I know exactly what it feels like from both sides. The people that are pro-mandatory vaccines and pro-mandatory masks are mad that I'm not. There are people that are anti-vaccines that are mad at me that I got the vaccine, that I fell for it. And then, listen, I hear it from both sides. But in the end, I made an informed decision. My physician, I have trusted for 25 plus years. And I went directly to him, and he had a conversation with me about why he believed in the vaccines. And he's someone that's very knowledgeable about the vaccines. I consulted another physician friend of mine. And when I got all the information from people based on the lifestyle I live and the work life I live in public, the right thing for me to do was to get the vaccine. And I did that as a 54-year-old person. Every parent out there has to make a decision based on what's best for their children. Are there going to be parents out there that make political decisions? Sure. Are there going to be parents that don't do what you think they should do? Absolutely. But there's going to come a time when you do things that other people disagree with your children. And you're going to want no one to get in the way of what you believe is right for your kids. Period. So this idea that you're going to see schools with classrooms full of maskless kids because they're not allowed to, that's not the case at all. School districts cannot mandate it. It is parental control. So all those school districts out there, including the superintendent of public instruction, you can go to the parents and plead your case. Give them the information that you think they don't have. It's possible, and it's the right way to handle it. If you're a mask person, if you believe masks work, then make sure your children wear one. Protect your child. And we've got to stop the fighting. Have an update on the economy coming up here in just a few moments. Jobless claims are down, which is very, very good. We are going to talk about inflation because now there's a new report out of the White House and some updates on how far your dollar might go. Next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
You all know that that song. Most of us do at our age, but we know the band ZZ Top bassist Dusty Hill passed away, 71 years old. Hadn't been touring with the band recently. Had shoulder issues, hip issues, and was in pretty serious health conditions, obviously. Passed away yesterday. Pretty shocking when you start seeing some of the bands and some of the people that you grew up with and the responses from people. Music is still a great unifier. It's why I'm such a big music fan that we can kind of set aside our differences at a concert, man. And it's great stuff. Matter of fact, I've got concerts I was supposed to see, and I don't know if they're going to cancel the show or not. Supposed to see ZZ Top in October here in town. And what a great band and what great memories. And sad news for Dusty Hill. ZZ Top is a band and all their fans and friends and family. So that's tough stuff to see someone that you grew up with and think, wow, it's first of all, that they're in their 70s is crazy. Anyway, the passing of Dusty Hill and of ZZ Top, the bass player. An update, a pause with everything that's been going on today, because we've been laser focused on a lot of local things, and we're going to get back to that in a couple of moments. But across the country, jobless claims are down, but we are still seeing elevated numbers compared to what we thought we were going to have. And so a slight decrease is going in the right direction, which is a good thing. The GDP falls short of as supply chain disruptions, labor shortages stunt the comeback. U.S. GDP trails forecast even as consumer spending surges. Voters are worried about inflation, and they're blaming the Biden administration. The Federal Reserve came out with a statement yesterday saying inflation could be higher and more persistent than expected. The reason why those last two stories are significant, it has nothing to do with getting Joe Biden out of office, or what it has to do with is the opinions of the American people. When it comes to America, most people vote with their wallets. I am very politically inclined, and because of my job, I know more than the average person because I'm in it every single day. It's kind of like the difference between someone that is a sports fan and like, you know, our buddies Doug and Wolf that do a sports show. They're immersed in it because it's their job. But most people vote with their wallets, and they look at their current situation and the potential for their future situation, and they vote for people that they believe are going to get them there. When the economy is going good, most presidents are reelected. When the economy is going bad, most of them are not. The way, in my opinion, the way that Barack Obama beat John McCain was that they effectively and successfully and wisely connected, fair or not fair, it's politics, John McCain to the Bush economy, and we saw the bottom fall out of the economy at the end of that presidential term. And so that's been the track record of the American people. When we see, and you can make a direct connection, the American people think like I do, but you can make a direct connection between the policies of this administration and the inflation that we're seeing. So the average American elected this president saying, we are not going to raise taxes on working people. We are going to bolster the middle class. We are going to bolster the working class. And so Joe Biden was elected president. Now, some of it was anti-Trump, but, you know, that this is what the American people voted for. What they have gotten is they have gotten an assault on the fossil fuels industry, which he did promise. But that what the worst case scenario of that is coming true. Gas prices are through the roof. I paid almost $3.50 a gallon for gasoline yesterday or the day before. We are seeing a huge increase in those prices. Supply chain slowdowns in costs. People are not going back to work, and yet we keep subsidizing people to stay home. 9 million jobs available. People not going back to work. I saw one story that said there are restaurants that are turning to robots to deliver food to tables because they can't get people back into the service industry to work. Now, being in the service industry when I was younger, I love restaurant work. And I know that sounds strange, especially with a lot of people that work in restaurants. I loved it. I loved the social atmosphere. I loved speaking to new people all the time. I even liked the people that didn't like me. You know, when you walk up to a table, you just get people that are grumpy sometimes. I even enjoyed those interactions. I think it's a great industry. And I've always known the people that are in the service industry to be very, very hardworking people that take pride in their jobs. Now, yes, there is a huge group of people in the service industry that use it as a transition, whether you are in college, so you do it for convenience, if you're a single parent doing it for the flexibility of schedule. But there are people that make a career in the service industry, and they make a nice living, but they also build a reputation. How many of us out there have a favorite bartender, a favorite waiter or waitress? We'll go to a restaurant and ask to be in their section or go on the days that they work. That is very, very common. And in the service industry, those people take great pride in providing that kind of service. You want to be known to be excellent at what you do. So it is an anomaly to me that people don't want to go back to work in the service industry. And part of it, I think, is its policies of subsidizing people staying home, all in the name of recovery. And so people in America are seeing that we are seeing problems with the policies. And again, it's not a personal attack. It never should have been against Trump, and it shouldn't be a personal attack now. But the policies of this administration are contributing to what we're seeing. And the American people are agreeing on this. I've been saying this for a long time, but the American people agree with this. It's not just me saying it because I'm a conservative talk host and talking about a Democrat president. Anybody could see this coming. We had energy independence. Now, I've had people say to me, so you think we should have cheap gas and destroy the planet? Well, the air is not any cleaner now than it was before. I don't believe that there's another nation on the planet that's more qualified to pull petroleum, pull oil out of the ground, no matter how they do it, whether it's through a well or fracking or otherwise, refine it and deliver it safely than America. No one's more qualified than us to do it the right way. And when we stop doing it, when the oil leases are suspended, when the pipelines are shut down, when fracking is shut down, other nations pick up the slack. But then you have to import it and it costs more money, and we're seeing costs go up. The average American family does not want to see their costs go up. And when they do, they look to the White House and its policies and they blame them. We are in the midst of a great economic recovery. We could stay on this track. We are watching the federal government spend trillions again on infrastructure. We are watching the federal government threaten to raise taxes again on job creators, specifically wealthy Americans and corporations that hire people. And we know a track record speaks for itself. It is going to affect the job market. Now we've got another spike in COVID-19 cases. What is that going to do moving forward? But if someone's going to blame that as the reason that the economy is slowing down or not growing, then that's a political stunt, because this has been going on during the COVID recovery when the promises were not kept on vaccination rates and other things. So there, people are starting to see this and ask questions, and it's a natural thing for people to do. In a moment, we're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. Not what you think. Not on-field performance. Behind-the-scenes performance. They were one of the worst teams in the NFL when it came to vaccinations. They now are one of the best. How is the NFL responding? Because there has been some players complaining about the policies of the NFL. So back to COVID-19, back to vaccines, and your Arizona Cardinals. Next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm going to expand this a little bit, but we're going to start with the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals were one of the worst in the NFL in vaccination rates at about 50%. Ian Rappaport just came out and said the Cardinals are now among the teams at 90%+ in vaccination, and said, in fact, the number of unvaccinated players on that team can be counted on one hand. Excellent progress. Ryan Tannehill, quarterback, said that it was very critical of the policy of the NFL, saying that the policy in the NFL makes it almost impossible for a player to say no to the vaccine. Now, there are those out there that cheer it, but that's been the policy of the NFL. I want to expand this a little bit. There was a protest out at the Capitol of healthcare workers protesting major healthcare companies here in the Valley mandating the vaccine for their workers. And they were carrying signs that I thought held a lot of weight that they weren't given credit for that said last year's heroes, this year's unemployed. Healthcare workers, many of them that were down there, dedicated people to their craft, dedicated to helping people with physical ailments, working in hospitals and healthcare facilities, protesting the mandates. And one nurse talked about being, I think she said 13 years as a nurse, that she should not have to choose between and what she called an experimental injection, which it still is technically with emergency use, and getting that vaccine and being able to do her job. We have all, myself included, held healthcare workers up in the highest regard. In the middle of COVID-19, I got diagnosed with hypertension, high blood pressure, which I didn't know that I had. And in December, I had a nosebleed that lasted for 4 days. And I was in and out of the emergency room for 4 straight days. They finally had to take me into a surgical procedure to stop the bleeding. And a part of it was my extremely high blood pressure wasn't allowing those small blood vessels to close. So I was dealing with healthcare workers in an emergency room setting almost for 4 days straight. And watching how they did their job in navigating COVID-19, I was blown away. You know, we talk about protecting ourselves, and we did. We were protecting ourselves. But when you're in an environment where you can't get away from it, how do you do it? And healthcare workers truly were heroic. They were working long shifts, no days off, double shifts, and 7, 8, 14 days separated from their families. I have friends that are nurses, mother and daughter, that are nurses that live together with children, grandchildren. And they were going through a protocol of their own of wiping down the inside of their car every day, stripping down clothes straight into the washing machine in the garage, straight into the shower, grandbabies and babies in separate homes so that they didn't infect them. And all of this while they were working so many shifts that they were exhausted by the end of it. They truly were heroic. And I think everybody, no matter where you stand on the mask and vaccines, would agree that healthcare workers gave a heroic effort in fighting COVID-19, especially when the spike happened and we were close to overwhelming hospitals. Now, some of those healthcare workers don't want the vaccine. Now, they're as knowledgeable as the people that do. They just disagree. They don't have the option. So here are the people that we would call heroes that are not being given the option of getting the vaccine. And they're furious about it, and they should be. You talk about the NFL. I believe in freedom for everyone. It's different in the sense that healthcare workers, A, are in that business. They have watched hospitals overwhelmed with COVID-19. They have seen it on the front lines. They know the science better than we do. And yet there are many of them that are still saying they don't want to have to take the vaccine. I'm not necessarily agreeing with them. I got the vaccine, both doses, right away. But don't they have the right to choose? And there are those out there that say no. So when they hold up signs that say last year's hero, this year's unemployed, there's a lot of significance to that statement for me. There is a lot of significance in that statement. We bent over backwards as a society to thank them, and we still couldn't thank them enough. The work they did to save lives during that overwhelming time was more than commendable. I thought we should do a parade. I'm not joking. That healthcare workers should be given a parade for the work that they did during COVID-19. And now some of them, because they are not really positive about getting the vaccine, are faced with losing their jobs when they were so critical. So how about this? I'm not trying to cause a fight, but I want you to think about something. When school teachers that are associated with Red for Ed didn't like the policies, they walked out. They left kids without a classroom or without online learning. They walked out to make a statement. What if healthcare workers did the same thing? What if these healthcare workers walked out of hospitals? First of all, they'd be jeopardizing lives and we'd be very critical of them. But they are upset about a policy and they're asking for people to recognize it. When teachers were upset about a policy, they walked out. Against their contract, they could have been fired for it. They left schools closed for days at a time. Healthcare workers are down at the Capitol protesting this, but just like first responders, cops, firefighters, they can't walk off the job. They can't. So here we are talking about the heroism of teachers, which I'm not downgrading, not denigrating at all. What about these healthcare workers? Don't they have the right to their own opinion? Don't they have their right to choose? Coming up at just after 11 o'clock, we're going to talk about the audit. Stephen Richard joined me. You'll hear what he said next.